take these folks on, and you've done a great job. We're out of time. Be careful. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, brother.
And we're done.
Wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at DennisJBernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned. KBOO, the best in community radio.
KBOO Community Radio has been chosen to be part of GiveGuide by Willamette Week. When you show your support for KBOO on GiveGuide or any of the other 170 participating organizations with a minimum $10 donation, you'll be thanked with full access to hundreds of local coupons in the Chinook Book mobile app, plus a few other goodies. Help us reach our GiveGuide goal. And don't forget that all new and increased donations will be matched up to $25,000. GiveGuide and this offer ends on December 31st, so donate today at kboo.fm/give.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closures of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hello and welcome to the KBOO Bike Show, recorded in Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on 90.7 FM, streaming at kboo.fm and podcasting at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. My name is Alon Robb, and I will be your host today. I hope this finds you and all your loved ones healthy and strong. The presidential elections are behind us, and the legally elected president is getting ready to assume the office, while the losing candidate is slowly, very, very, very slowly, finding that his tricks and tantrums and assault on democracy and truth are failing. In the state of Georgia, two runoff races to the U.S. Senate are just ahead, with their outcomes having tremendous effect on the country and the planet. Our guests today are from the state of Georgia, two bicycle activists and community leaders who will talk about their work to make their state more bicycle friendly and also more just and equal. Our first guest is Kimberly Jones, co-chair of Georgia Bikes, the state's leading bicycle organization. In the second half of the show, our guest will be Nedra Deadweiler, founder of Sybil Bikes, a bike tour company whose tours shed light on local history, oppression, and resistance. Kimberly Jones is co-chair of Georgia Bikes, the state's leading bicycle organization. Since 2006, Georgia Bikes has helped make cycling in Georgia safer, more common, and more enjoyable. Through bike summits, advocacy, lobbying, and education programs, it has increased awareness and ridership. Kimberly Jones is also the CEO of Spokes Digital Media, marketing and community outreach manager for the Atlanta Bike Share Program, and part of the team that opened Clutch Bicycle Shop. Good day, Kimberly Jones, and welcome to the KBO Bike Show.
Hello.
Before we get to your work with Georgia Bikes and your other bicycle activities, I'd like to know a little bit about your own cycling journey. Were you a cyclist as a child, or how did your cycling journey begin?
Wow, we're going to take it way back. Let's see. I started cycling probably, of course, I cycled when I was a child. I remember being an adult and cycling to work, and also cycling to the beach. I lived about 3 miles away from the beach, and so that was something that I would do just for a relaxing afternoon. I had a little beach cruiser, and then I would take it out and just enjoy my afternoon. And then I realized that, hey, we get some gears, so I upgraded and got a hybrid bike, and I started to bike to work on the sidewalk in Virginia Beach. It took me about, I was probably about 2 miles from work, so I would bike every morning. And bike on my lunch breaks, and then bike, of course, back home. So I realized that that biking during the middle of the day really helped me because I was focused. I was able to sit at the computer and just really get work done, and then have that release of being outside and in nature. It just helped me with my day and the flow. Huh. So that's when I started biking, and that's kind of like, you know, where I knew that I wanted to have, you know, bikes in my life some way, somehow.
And what is it like to bike in Georgia? Would you describe it as a good place for cycling? Let's say Atlanta.
So moving to Atlanta, I realized and I saw people that looked like me on bikes and different types of bikes. I saw hybrids, I saw road bikes. And that was the first time I've seen a group ride. And I would say that from that perspective, yes, it's a good place for bicycles, because you see a representation, you see yourself, you see different groups of people, and people are out and about enjoying each other's company and living a healthy lifestyle. But there's also the side of awareness and cars, caring, and that infrastructure. So from that point of view, we're better than some places, but not anywhere near where we need to be.
What is it like to bike in rural Georgia, in a small town or in the country? Are there any bicycle lanes? Do you see a lot of cyclists over there?
Let's see. I biked in rural Georgia. It was a one group ride. And yes, you do see cars, other cars. It's usually like, you know, two lane road type deal. Usually don't have any bike lanes, but not saying they don't have any, but I just don't have that much experience to say. But in general, with or without bike lanes, I would say that the culture, the car culture, is what, you know, is important, and how cars look at cyclists that are in the road. Instead of being patient, they get upset or angry sometimes. So that's the important thing.
That happens, you know, even in towns like Portland, Davis, Berkeley, Eugene. Those are university towns I lived in, and you know, they're good for cycling, but even there are some drivers that unfortunately feel that the road and the world belong to them alone, and they're not ready to share the road. But it seems like there's a growing awareness of cyclists by all. So, and Georgia Bikes, the organization that you co-chair, how did
11, they were able to pass the 3 feet passing bill, so we won that. So a lot of things that Georgia Bikes done for the community, which is basically the state as a whole, to get us to be as bike friendly as possible and create awareness. So they've always had Nedra Civil Bikes. I think you're going to have a conversation with her. She was on the staff, so she was out passing out flyers, doing events, and just getting the word out. So she was instrumental in a lot of the recent wins that the state has had as a bike pole.
And you mentioned something happening in 2011. What was that law that was passed?
That was the 3 feet safe passing bill. I remember that because that was kind of when I was fresh in the area, and that's what a lot of people were talking about. Yep. And so cars are supposed to give, you know, cyclists 3 feet, but that's the law.
And part of the work of the organization is interacting with elected officials, government agencies. What has been your experience in that arena? Is there, when you go, you or other members of the organization go and speak with legislatures, what kind of attitudes do you get? Do you feel like there's a positive change?
I went to go speak to legislative one time, and at that time that was a great learning experience for me because I was able to see behind the scenes of what happens and how we get these bills and these laws passed. And in the room speaking to them, they seem to understand, and of course they know that bicycles and infrastructure is a problem, but sometimes when that comes out to play in the real world, it takes a while, so it's kind of hard to say until we actually start seeing a little bit more movement and the politicians actually understanding what the people need as far as infrastructure and safe streets. And I think the our current times, unfortunately, the pandemic is kind of helping open up the eyes to a lot of politicians over all over the world. I hope we get a little bit more people that see it that way here in the United States, that, you know, safe streets are a thing and they should be included for the people of the community.
Amen. it seems like you know, in the midst of all the suffering and death from the pandemic, one positive effect has been an increased cycling all over the world. You know, many places it's hard to find a bike, even a new bike, a used bike. So that's great, seeing that and hearing about that all over the world. And hopefully after the pandemic is under control, cycling will continue. People will keep cycling. When you talk to legislators or people from the organization, do you find that there's a difference between Republican and Democratic legislatures, or love of bicycles crosses all party lines?
I would say the love and the not understanding of bicycles crosses all party lines. So I can't really put anybody in a box, because I don't keep track of it that way. Uh-huh. But I know in my experience and just talking with people in conferences, and like I said, when I lobbied that one time, it crosses. People understand, some people don't. And so it's our job as advocates and people that ride bikes and want to make it safe for the future to keep spreading the word. And I think that internet, social media, all of that's helping with the people that actually lobby and go speak and form these relationships with the politicians. So I think both sides are equally important, because like entertainment, the car business, that's how they influence the culture, mm-hmm. was through entertainment. So I think the cyclists need to understand that it's a full-on approach for this culture shift, and I think we're getting there.
And you've also been involved with the Atlanta Bike Share program. How is that going?
So the Atlanta Bike Share program was Relay Bike Share, and I was on a team that launched it in 2016, and I was the marketing and the community outreach manager. So we had a lot of events that we would do around town, a lot of rides, and we also had ambassadors. I trained to do community outreach in the neighborhood. So that program went really well. We grew the bike share from 100 to 500 bikes with a team of ambassadors and people on staff at the Atlanta Bicycle Coalition, Georgia Bike shared our information to people. So it was a great community effort. And Relay Bikes are still in town. I no longer do the marketing and the community outreach as of October 2019. So that is still a bike share, and we just hope the best and see where they're going to take it with our, you know, changing times like any other bike share. They're probably, you know, moving and grooving and figuring out what to do and how to address that.
And the bike share program, are the riders mostly tourists or local people?
When I worked for a relay, it was local, a lot of local people, because we really were, had our wheels on the ground. We were marketing to the community events, so it was a lot of local people. But we did have a market for tourists and people that did group rides.
You are listening to the KBO Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM, streaming on kbo.fm and available as a podcast at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. Our subject today is the state of cycling in Georgia, and we're talking with Kimberly Jones, co-chair of Georgia Bikes. Who cycles in Georgia? Is there a typical rider? Is it mostly in cities or university towns?
I would like to probably say the urban center here in Atlanta. There's a lot of cycling. And then we also have like the Silver Comet, which is like right outside the Atlanta area. It takes people to. So there's a lot of cycling in different areas in Georgia that cycle. We have pretty good representation as far as road. We have some places where you can go with dirt. We have BMX. So there's a little bit of all types of people that cycle in Georgia. So that's why it's really important that we keep these wheels rolling and getting these laws passed for infrastructure and awareness.
And you are also the CEO of Spokes Digital Media. What does your business do?
My brand, Spokes Digital Media, is in the business of community outreach and marketing. So we help create the experience, and that includes connecting bikes with people in the community and stakeholders through digital media, marketing, social media, and so on.
And are your clients mostly in the state of Georgia or across the country?
Across the country. Mm-hmm. And actually, I got a few out of the country, too. So it just depends on what campaign we're working on or what, you know, the goals are. But I do have clients from all over. I was in a digital world for a while, and I love the fact that it does connect me to different countries and different cultures.
And what kind of campaigns do people interested when they approach you?
Usually looking to do community outreach, so inform the community about what's going on. A way to do that by connecting with current businesses and local businesses in their area. Cool campaigns on social media that also work in person. So just connecting the back end, basically newsletters and stuff like that. So that's usually what I end up doing. Everybody's different about like what they need and what they have already. So I kind of just balance it and take each client by client.
I know the organization, Georgia Bikes, is across all political lines, but I'm just curious, you know, as the elections are, the runoff election for Senate or coming up in Georgia, two elections, what is the atmosphere like in the state? Is it something people talk about? Is it something people think about?
Yeah, people are really active and they participate in government. And I mean, it's good to see, depending on, you know, what level you're at. Some people just focus on local. Some people focus on national. So it just depends on where you're at and what you are, what's important to you. But I do see a lot of people are interested in what's going on. And I understand that what we are fighting for are laws, but ultimately it's the people that are behind these laws. Like, we shouldn't have to have a law that says don't hit a pedestrian or don't hit somebody. Like, that's not something that we should have to fight for. But also, it's something that the cities can make better so that it's not so easy for it to happen. Mm-hmm. So it goes both ways, and whether or not you are into politics or not, it does affects everybody, and I see it working both ways.
And during the last election, were bicycles used at all for organizing? I mean, in some countries and places, you know, people distribute information from bicycles. There are bike rides for particular candidates. Has that happened in Georgia, as far as you know?
Yes. I've seen the Atlanta Bicycle Coalition, which is a local nonprofit. They had some bike to vote type hashtags going on. This year, I know it was kind of hard. I know a lot of people were doing a lot of promotions online on their social media to remind people to go register or, you know, mail in their ballots. Mob, a cycling group here. They had a ride, I think like a series of rides to talk about why it's important to be civically engaged. So there were like two or three cycling groups. Red Bike and Green did something. So yeah, so there were groups that were engaging riders actively throughout the period to engage on a ballot in person or mail it in. So I did see a lot of bicycle groups take part in that. And Dope Peloton. Well, I'm thinking about names, they're coming to me. Yeah, so I did see a lot of posts and a lot of activation through the bike community to encourage people to go out and be civically engaged. So yeah, Atlanta's pretty we're pretty diverse, and we pretty much understand the importance of cycling, but we also, a lot of the groups that I name, understand that it's bigger than just cycling. Like, this is our community building, this is health and wealth, and this is power and equity in the community. So it's bigger than bikes, but the bikes bring it all together.
It seems like in other places, you know, some bicycle organizations, mostly the mainstream ones, have decided not to get too involved in the election, but other groups, as you mentioned, you know, are very active trying to promote the vote and supporting progressive candidates. So it seems like it's a balance, you know, between different approaches here. Do you think this, what you just described with the way some bicycle groups have been involved, do you think it will carry on after the election, or is it just a one-time thing?
I would like to think that civically engaged would carry on, because I think the carry on part is where we drop the ball as a community. Sometimes we don't enforce or make people do the things that they say they were going to do, or we aren't active as a whole on our end. So I think the carrying on part is a conversation to have, and more people should look into having that conversation. So it's a work in progress.
And you're also involved with a new bike shop?
About maybe, how long has it been? Maybe 2 years ago. It was I was basically a brand ambassador, helping create awareness for a bike shop that was opening in my neighborhood. And the connection with Clutch Bicycle Shop and Aztec Cycling is a Black-owned cycle shop family. And they were the ones that really connected me to the bike community here in Atlanta. And then they opened up in my neighborhood. He's had his eye on this area for a long time. It just so happens to be that it was where I live. So welcome to the Beltline, a new bike shop. And now this whole area has somewhere where I can send people to go to the bike shop right down the street, instead of having to send them 5 miles further down the road to a whole other neighborhood. So, yep, Clutch Bicycle Shop. It's thriving and doing well in the west end of Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, that's good. In Portland, and I assume Atlanta is also affected by gentrification. So in Portland, some of the old-time bike stores unfortunately closed in the last few years because of the increased rents. There's still quite a few bike shops and bike centers and organizations, but it was sad to see, you know, gentrification pushing away businesses and individuals, of course, also. Is that what's happening in Atlanta also?
Yes, we that was part of the community outreach. Our team with the Relay Bike Share, the Bike Share Champions, had to address that question a lot, because usually they associate bike share and bike lanes with gentrification. So yes, that is happening in our community. We also have people on the community level that are doing everything to inform the community of what they need so that it doesn't happen, and the importance of legacy. But it is happening in our community, and that's why we do need to protect Clutch Bicycle Shop at all means, because they were able to be in the neighborhood and they're still here, and people are riding bikes. The Beltline is right around across the street from them, so we should definitely support that business as much as possible so they're not part of that story.
You mentioned earlier that when you came to Atlanta, you felt like more people like you are riding a bike. Can you explain a little bit what your experiences have been, what you mean by this?
Yes, when I when I lived in Virginia Beach, I had a little hybrid and beach cruiser, and I only saw what I called at the time skinny tire bikes on Saturday mornings with a group of white males that would ride by my work. And I didn't know it was even considered a group ride. I would just see them in passing when I worked Saturdays. And I was like, oh, okay. And then you realize it was the Lance Armstrong bikes. I never really gave it the name of a road bike yet. I just kind of saw it in passing. Uh-huh. And then when I moved to Atlanta, I saw people getting around the city on road bikes. Some of them were track bikes. And, you know, I'm learning the terminology as I get here, to track bikes, city bikes, urban bikes, whatever. But seeing people in a drop, with the drop handles, people that look like me, black people, women. I saw men. I saw a group of black riders ride by. I participated in my first ride for MLK Day. So it was just a whole bunch of people that looked like me that were excited about biking. And I've never come across that before I came to Atlanta. It was usually just me telling my family, come on, let's go to the bike. Let's go ride bikes. Let's do this on a bike. And, you know, encouraging the people around me and my group to ride.
Our time is almost up here, so I'd like to ask you the last question. What's next for you? I mean, do you have a long-range plan? Where do you see yourself and your bicycle activism in 10 years, 20 years?
Yeah, definitely have a long-range plan. What's next? 10, 20 years is going to be a leader in the entertainment and bicycle community and community outreach. So growing the sport, growing the brand, of it's not just super fast people. It's people want to get on their bike and go slow. People want to go fast. Whatever it is, we need to spread the word, because the future is going to really need micromobility to grow. So that's where we're at for the long-term goal. For short-term goals, I have a few campaigns that are coming up with local digital content creators and bike groups close to me. So 2021 is going to be a good year.
You're listening to the KBO Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. We have been speaking with Kimberly Jones, co-chair of Georgia Bikes, about the state of cycling in her state. Thank you, Kimberly, for sharing your knowledge and insights, and much success with your work. In the second half of the hour, our guest will be Nedra Deadweiler, who's the founder of the Civil Bikes Historical Bike Tours in Atlanta, Georgia. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back. You're listening to the KBO Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, and available also as a podcast. My name is Alon Robb, and in the second half of the show, we will have as our guest Nedra Deadweiler, founder of Civil Bikes, a bike tour company in Atlanta, Georgia, that brings civil and human rights stories alive. The tours follow in the footsteps of the men and women who fought for justice and equality, resisting racist systems of oppression, and building community. Nedra Deadweiler is also a fellow at the Center for the Civic Innovation and is the Safety Education Program Manager for Georgia Bike. Nedra Deadweiler, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Alon. It's nice to be here. I appreciate it.
And you're now in Atlanta, correct?
I am in Atlanta. I am, yes, in Atlanta, ready for the end of the year and to change to 2021, to hopefully some new things going on here in Atlanta.
Amen.
Yeah.
What distinguishes Atlanta? What would you say are some of the city's unique historical and geographical features?
In Atlanta, really Atlanta is not in the center of the state. We're in the northern part of the state, in a region that's known as the Piedmont region. So we're not really in what was like the Black Belt, where say plantations were, and largely that was agriculture. I mean, that's probably about beginning maybe an hour outside of the city south. So we're in a region that has largely been mostly like transportation oriented, so railroads. One thing that people, when they see here, they don't realize that Atlanta is actually a hilly city. It is quite hilly, not as hilly as say Seattle, with those like gigantic hills to climb on a bike.
Mm-hmm.
But these hills are kind of like low grade, but they are longer and And it just, you know, if you're on a bike and you're not expecting it, it can leave you winded. But some of the hills have also, the ridge line have been leveled or cut. And so they're not as probably tall as they were originally. But we're in the foothills of the Appalachian, the Appalachian Mountains. So Atlanta is known as a city in the forest. And so we are losing our tree canopy, mm-hmm. due to development that's kind of going rampant, I would say, that's really being pushed forward. But it's a very green city. And kind of, even though it's a city, it's very much more neighborhood oriented. So I think it's an easier city for someone coming into, easier than New York, if you're not ready for like hustle and bustle, a lot of traffic, et cetera. It's just more low key and easy going. But those are some geographical differences, I would say, or highlights. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I think that is so different from the Pacific Northwest, Atlanta, is that we don't have any water. Like, the Chattahoochee River technically runs from like North Atlanta through South Atlanta, so it runs through the city, but it's underground. You know, it's going through caverns, diverted in different ways. But there are a lot of streams, so they're really hidden. So you'd have to know where they're located to find where the water comes up and where to find it. But we're missing a body of water that we can recreate around and just like kind of be rejuvenated by. Mm. So
we'll get back to Atlanta and the bicycle tours you lead. But before that, were you always a cyclist? What's your cycling history?
Yeah, good question, I guess, for a bike show. I had to ask my mom because I don't have the best memory, but she said I started riding a bike about like 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. So I rode a bike early. As a child, I love being outside. So I'd say that's my favorite habitat. And outside, what does that mean? It could be anywhere. But I was on a bike early as a middle schooler, that fifth grade, seventh grade. I would go riding in my neighborhood, go off with friends. So pretty free on a bike. But like when I got to high school, I bused to a different school. So being on a bike was not my form of play or recreation or getting exercise. I started playing sports. So I didn't come back to a bicycle until my mid-20s, and it was an intentional act because I moved out of Georgia. I left the South and I moved to New York City, but I moved there because I wanted to be in a place where I could bike, I could walk, I could take public transportation. So it was an intentional move because I wanted to change my life. I got tired of that feeling of freedom that I found having a car. Had started to become something that was more isolating and just I just wasn't enjoying it anymore. And it didn't help that someone also ran into my car, but that's another story.
And how did Civil Bike start? How did that idea come to you and what is it?
Yeah, I will say it came to me in two ways. I would say partially it is from just my experience, how I would feel that I connected to cities that I moved to. The way I connected to New York was biking around, exploring, walking around different neighborhoods, just being in public space. I really didn't understand, probably didn't think too deeply about it at that time. But later on reflecting, I realized how valuable and how much I learned about the people that I was living next door to or working near, or, you know, shop owners. And the same thing was when I moved to Seattle, it was that experience on a bike, sense of freedom, sense of levity, even, you know, places like think deeply, connect internally as well as externally, it was done on a bike. And then the way the idea really sort of coalesced and came together was when met a friend who was a journalist who was visiting the state and was doing like a civil rights trail. He was a tourist writer, and so was going to a couple of different cities to look at their civil rights history. And so I went to Alabama to see some of the civil rights sites. Unbeknownst to me, it's now like living online. They were creating their civil rights trail. Mm-hmm. And so they're the tourism board in Alabama, and which they've done a great job with like putting markers and writing history about Indigenous Americans, you know, African Americans, and then also the Confederacy. So, but they were at that time developing the Civil Rights Trail. And so the tourists, when a woman who was a tour director took us on a trip. Tina is her name, and we're still in contact today, but we visited various sites from a safe house that Dr. King had went to in Greensboro. We went to University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, where to learn about, I don't remember the names, but it was integrated, several other things, and went to a barber shop, a reverend, who was also a reverend, and the walls of the barbershop were covered with newspaper articles. You know, it was a living museum, newspaper articles, photographs, memorabilia of various things that had happened, different types of actions, marches and sit-ins, gatherings. And it was just remarkable. And we were in her car. I was in the back seat, and I was just like, this would be so much better on a bike. And it hit me, like, why not do a bike tour and bike, you know, bike to civil rights sites? And, you know, that it would just be a way to not only experience the beauty, the roads in Alabama are a bit more rural. And so experiencing being on a bike, I had ridden the from Seattle to Portland, so the STP, and which we were on rural roads, and just like being that reminded me of the STP and that ride, that it could be a lot of fun and engaging and a way to learn, but also a way to like cycle through some of the like the harms and negativity, the violence that happened around Black folks gaining civil rights. So, yeah.
Do you think that walking and biking change the perspective at which a place is understood? I mean, is there something about those activities that make your tours more immediate, more personal, or?
Yeah, I think my intention in doing the tours, it's, you know, it's not like we're walking through and just pointing to different things like this is this, you know, this is this knowledge. I really want people to be very present and notice like who's on the sidewalk. You know, we make a couple of stops in the community at a cultural space or with a local artist or at a business. And so they're able to engage with people who live there and work there. And so I wanted people to really have this like, you know, this a radical experience where they're not just in a confined space passing through, that they're a part of the action that's happening on the street, that they are also creating their own touch points, their own like understanding. And so the way we move through the spaces, like regardless of what people know, don't know, they're invited to share their knowledge, share what they are experiencing in the moment, or reflect on, you know, an experience like this, or maybe, you know, this reminds them of something where they come from. So it's really about making these connections to the place that we are standing or riding, you know, from one place to the next. It's about making those connections like between us and also like personally. Because ultimately, like, although it's a tour, I don't see it as being touristic. You know, for me, that's not what it's about. It's really about, it's really about creating a change, you know, a perspective of getting to know and understand. Because what I realized as a Black person, as a Black woman, like in different ways, you know, people really didn't understand me if they were not another Black person or a Black person from the South. You know, like there's miscommunications, misunderstandings, or people believe stereotypes because they have no real interactions with Black people. And so, you know, a lot of the, and in the neighborhoods that we're at, we are in Black neighborhoods. So they're in a Black neighborhood. And the whole thing is really to kind of change, to change people's understanding and experiences, create something new. You know, to the depth that happens, you know, I can't necessarily say, but that's the intention.
And definitely, you know, stopping to talk to people who are engaged in things now and reflecting, I mean, gives a sense that history is not something that happened in the past and long gone, but something that we create all the time, and that we have, as individuals and groups, have a responsibility and impact. So it's not something you put in a museum, but it's something you live. And obviously, the Black Lives Matter and the movement to remove some of the horrible monuments, which we'll get into in a minute, is an example. But I'm wondering if you could describe some of the stops on the tours. What are some of the events and the individuals that you note?
I'll speak of a few of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Like one, we did a radical women's tour, and there were actually a couple of artists in that one. One was Mary Parks Washington. She grew up in a neighborhood called Ashby Grove. So we'll stop at a house where she grew up in. That was one stop. So it's a Southern vernacular house. It is still standing and occupied by someone who's lived in a neighborhood for a long time. Her artwork, she became an educator and she was a prolific artist, and she really helped to elevate other artists and did a lot of documentation of like Black life, Black communities, and also made inroads in multicultural education. She left the South and moved to California, but her artwork is, and her papers have been gifted to the Auburn Avenue Research Library, which is an archive. It has an archive that began like back in the 1940s, 40s, 50s. And it's akin to the Schoenberg in New York. Mm-hmm. So that's one person we'll stop at. Like to also, I mean, again, elevating other women. There's one woman, Ruby Parks Blackburn. She was a consummate organizer, and she had been a beautician. She had worked in a cafeteria, been a beautician, and she organized from community beautification is kind of where she started. But she also started the Negro Women's Voters League, because there was a Women's Voter League, but Black women participated in that, and like educated women around the vote, how to vote, and in order for them to join the league, they had to recruit someone else, you know, they had to vote, they had all these requirements. So it was like the civic education and participation was important. She also organized an organization, a cultural league for domestic workers. And as you know, that domestic work was largely occupied by Black women. Probably 99.5% who worked in the, at least here in Georgia in the South, worked as domestics. Didn't have any rights, but she provided education around like rights, as well as like being a better, you know, domestic worker, more efficient in those things. So, you know, she did a number of things. And so she had an office space on Auburn Avenue. We stopped by there. We'll stop at murals. There are a number of mural organization as well as muralists. So like there's an Ella Baker mural. There are a couple of them. And that artist, Charmaine Minifield, along with Sean David, have done other murals around the city. So we'll, you know, then there's like Diamond Hill, which is right next door to Atlanta University, and where many of the professors might have lived, some of the creme de la creme, like Herndon, Alonzo Herndon, who was a barber, but he also started an insurance company. And he had great wealth and was very prominent. The insurance company is still around today. So like we'll stop at, you know, another stop at his home and Diamond Hill in that area. So those are just a few of the places. And across the street was like George Towns, who was a professor at Atlanta University. His daughter, Grace Towns Hamilton, she married a man who was a builder. She became the first Black woman to be a state representative. And she was able to work across the aisle. So it was like a very political space, as well as like leaders in the community. And, you know, it was like the ethos of Black uplift. W.D. Du Bois was a professor at Atlanta University. So Stone Hall is where his office is located. And so that's right down the, like, a half a block away from where these two houses that I just talked about. So it was that close to the university, but it was a very sacred space, even now, just because of like of the belief that Black people could have autonomy, you know, make decisions, mm-hmm. and also like elevate each other. So those are like a few of the spaces, type of spaces, that we stop at. You make the point of the past is not the past, it's also the present. And, you know, and a lot of people who participate help to bring that conversation forward. And, you know, this summer is really even pressing the point of who are local leaders now, you know, what are they doing? And how, what is the similarity of practice and or, you know, communities that they come from? You know, I think it's a conversation to definitely continue to have, to see how we continue to organize and like think about like what is, you know, what type of strategies do we use to get people involved.
You are listening to the KBO Bike Show, and our guest today is Nedra Deadweiler of Civil Bikes from Atlanta, leading historical tours. Who are the people that participate, and their children also, school kids? Is there a typical participant?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. We've had full groups. We've done some school groups, like walking tours with a couple of middle schools, one a parochial school, a religious school, and one a like public school. And they've come a couple of times. There's a school that comes every year. They come out of France and they bring a new group of students. So they're French students, but they're learning about the American South. And I really enjoy, there's another group that comes out of Colorado that's come a couple of times. I enjoy students really the most because they're uninhibited and they will speak their mind. And it's probably the most engaging. Primarily the tourists are people who participate, are adults. You know, there are folks who are coming out of town, in from out of town. They're here for a conference. There are some locals, and maybe that percentage is like 60-40, 60 out of town, 40% locals. And some of those locals are newer arrivals mostly the majority of people who will come are white, and there are a few, say, POC, folks who come out of the country. I've had people come from different countries to come on a tour, which that is also fun. There was a conference, I forget what the conference was, but they were all on that maybe it was a sustainability conference, came from different parts of the world, and, you know, they were sharing about, like, someone was from Spain, was talking about, like, you know, the issues that we have today around both health care, being a parent and having children, you know, talking about those issues and how it is for them in their countries and what they've experienced. Some people have migrated from one country to the next. So it's just like sharing these perspectives and experiences and like listening to each other. That was another tour, I would say, that was dynamic just because people really felt comfortable to participate. They didn't have a stake with like maintaining, you know, like I'm a liberal, I'm a white liberal. They didn't have to feel like they needed to maintain that front. They were able to just be themselves. But I would say most people who come are majority white and probably are with skew, if not liberal, they may be religious and wanting to, you know, and their life has been about like trying to, what is that, reconciliation. So there are people who this is something that's important to them. And I'm glad for their participation. But I also think about the people who don't, you know, there's a lot of engagement on social media that happens and those folks will never come on a tour, but like we're able to still have these, you know, have these conversations. And I think that's an important space, just like being in person. Although like that in-person experience, I think, you know, it's also about no matter where you are, you're going to have a Black space, right? Like there's going to be a Black community in every city and across the U.S. And so going there and being in those spaces, and it's like, how do you be in those spaces and not just be comfortable, but also be accepting and being able to not be that person who's just wanting to make it different, but like to accept that space for what it is and being able to be open enough to appreciate the culture and the history and and seeing that it's this community, you know, these communities are still relevant. And I think like, you know, like I'm in Atlanta proper, and the city is definitely gentrifying rapidly. Like there's a house just sold down the street for me for like $765,000. What the heck? A lot of money. And it's like, you know, that's fine. You know, that is totally fine. But like, I hope that everybody, no matter how much, what I would want is for a community when no matter what someone paid for their house, they are still seen as a valuable part of the community. And that's just not always the case when someone's concerned about their property value. And, you know, and it's like, that's a harmful thing that we have to really deal with and address in our society, because we're always going to be displaced if we're looking at property value being what is important in our community.
Well, and the tours you lead seem like they remind us of what's lasting and real, human connection, resistance, people helping each other. You know, that seems to me to be one of the basis of your tours, whether you, you know, say that in words or not. I get a very strong sense from reading about your tours and also speaking to you that it's that concern for justice that's what comes pretty clear and loud. I don't know where our time disappeared, because I feel like we could talk for a few more hours here, but quickly I'd like to ask you just a few questions about the coming elections, if you don't mind. What is the atmosphere like in, you know, in your community? What do people feel, talk about when it comes to the runoff elections?
Everyone, like most people I know are engaged personally. I feel like the volume on social media to get out, say, has decreased. But people I know, you know, are saying or posting and are demonstrating that they are getting their absentee ballots. My family, like I talk a lot with my family about it too, and just like the ridiculousness in our options that we have, and thinking about like Georgia's always had Republican, not maybe always, has had Republican senators, and the need to really change that, and the importance of getting people out to vote for in the second election. But there's a lot of conversation with folks I know. This mechanism of white supremacy that is still in our electoral process that could still show up even right now. We have to be vigilant, and the same enthusiasm that we had to turn out the vote, get people engaged and informed and participate, we have to do that for this election too. So, you know, there are some people I know that are strategizing. There's another organization that we're going to strategize together to, you know, like do the same thing, inform people and be like, come on, let's do this. But, you know, at Georgia has really turned, you know, moderately blue, well, maybe a bit past purple. And a lot of folks I know have celebrated that. And, you know, to really make this a historical moment, you know, to have Ossoff and Warnock in the Senate would really make a difference. And I have to give my hat off to Ossoff to come back to, you know, to go through this process again. I really appreciate Reverend Warnock because, you know, he's really been vocal in his pulpit. But, you know, he's also like, I was just like, of course it had to take a reverend out of Ebenezer Baptist Church to get into the Senate. So like, that is going to be what it takes for that to happen here. So I'm really hopeful that both of them will make it into the Senate just to like tip that iceberg and make it a blue thing.
All right. This is speaking about hope is a great place to end. You have been listening to the KBO Bike Show broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. All shows are available as podcasts on bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. My name is Alon Robb, and I would like to thank our guests, Kimberly Jones and Nedra Deadweiler, who have shed light on cycling in their home state of Georgia. Thank you for listening. All the best in the new year. Health, joy, creativity, peace, and justice. May your dreams come true.